1207 FM Talk 106.5, and it is normally Midday Mobile, but special programming today as I am joined in studio by Senator Sessions, Dr. Lou Campomanosi from the Common Sense Campaign, and of course, all of y'all and your questions for this forum. And I want to point out, like we talked about this morning, that Tommy Tuberville has been invited to participate in this and has declined, or we have heard nothing from the Tuberville campaign on this, but has been invited to this. And so coming up today, we're going to have questions from Dr. Lou, also Robert Kennedy Jr., asking questions, and you. Phone lines and text line open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Let me hand it over to the moderator in studio and the moderator remotely, Dr. Lou and Robert Kennedy Jr.
Well, Sean, thank you very much for having us doing this. This is just a super opportunity, and the fact that we've got Robert Kennedy also involved with this, I think, is a tribute to Senator Sessions' willingness to meet and talk to anyone, whereas his opponent doesn't seem to be ready to talk to anyone, you know? So I think that, you know, Senator Sessions does not need any further introduction, but I'd like to let you say just a couple of words, Senator, and then we'll get right into our questions.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. It's good to be with you, Sean, and the people of Mobile, my home since 1975. My two daughters graduated from Murphy, my son at St. Paul's, and we've been loved this community so much, and it's been an honor to me to serve the people of Alabama. In the Senate, have always really worked hard to be worthy of the trust people have given me. I understand the seriousness of the job. I understand the importance of it, both in terms of protecting the interests of the people of Alabama, whether it's helping bring Austell here or protecting our Coast Guard, or keeping the channel and the state docks healthy, and the new bridge that we've got to focus on and make happen, and Baldwin County and the Foley Beach Express, and those kind of things we've worked on for so many years, Airbus, ThyssenKrupp. So those things are out there. But also, people want their senator to be not a potted plant, not an empty suit, not somebody that's afraid to debate or even discuss the issues. They want the senator to go to Washington and defend our values on the world stage. These are not little matters. The debates are very serious. You need to, if you're going to impact it, you've got to know what you're talking about. And it's not just voting. You just don't go to Washington and vote. You've got to know what you're doing. You've got to read these bills. You've got to work constantly. It's a full-time job, really, and staying in touch with the people. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm not surprised Tommy Tuberville has ducked this again. Remember, before the primary, Bradley Byrne, a congressman from here, my congressman, said if he was one of the two left after the primary, he would debate. I said I would debate. What did Tommy Tuberville say before the primary? He said, I will debate. So all three said when it got down to two people, they would participate in a debate, and he promptly broke that promise. He made that promise to help himself win the primary, lead in the primary, but not much, a point and a half over me. But he has breached that promise. I think integrity is an important thing. Character is an important thing. So we should mention that at this point. Sean, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here.
Okay, so let me set the stage. Basically, what we're going to do is have Robert Kennedy Jr., who is, you know, everyone on this station, I think, knows who Robert is. Conservative Democrat, and I'm very glad that he agreed to join us today. So Robert will ask the first two questions. I will then ask two questions. No, excuse me, I've got that wrong. I'm supposed to ask the first two questions. Robert asked two questions, and then Sean will bring in the audience question. So that's basically what we're going to do. We'll rotate through the first half hour that way. We'll do the same thing in the second half hour. And hopefully we'll get to do more than two questions on our side, but we'll see what happens with it. So let's just go ahead and get started. Senator, I know that you had this question the other day with our Christian stations that we had you on, and it has to do with the explanation of this what's going on at the Church of the Highlands in Birmingham. Please explain to the audience why the problem in the Church of the Highlands is an attack on religious liberty.
It's an attack on liberty. It's an attack on free speech. It's really unbelievable. There needs to be more talking about it. I know the church doesn't want to get involved in a lawsuit, and I understand that, but they have been mistreated by the Birmingham School Board and the Birmingham Housing Board. What happened was the minister, I think, liked three tweets, non-controversial tweets of Charlie Kirk, and all he did was like them. He didn't even retweet them. And someone in Birmingham saw that. They complained that they didn't like him liking, I guess, a conservative pundit's tweets, although they were not in any way excessively ideological. And the school board met in a special session, put the lease they had to rent the auditorium at Woodlawn High School for their worship services. They have 60,000 members, and they have a lot of different locations to have worship services. And they canceled the lease simply because of this tweet. And the housing board canceled their relationship in which they were ministering in public housing to help young people be successful in their careers and avoid a danger that's out there. I thought it was unbelievable. I have criticized it substantially. I've written a letter to the mayor, who runs the housing board, and to the school board, demanding that they consult their lawyers and reverse this trends, this action. If they don't, I think additional matters need to be advanced, considering maybe even legislation. Let me just say one more thing. Alabama cannot go down this path. Lou, this is a problem on universities all over the country. They are silencing people they don't agree with, and they are punishing and hammering and driving out of the profession people who do not kowtow to all their ideological left-wing, even socialist views. I think it's a terrible thing in our colleges and universities. We cannot allow this to continue. I fought it as Attorney General. I made speeches around the country on free speech. We intervened in many cases in which citizens were trying to defend their free speech rights, and we went in and filed briefs on their side and joined with them, because there's no better time, no more important time to defend free speech and freedom of religion than when it's under attack, and it's under attack now. I understand it. I'm not sure my opponent does.
Well, thank you for that answer. I think that, this is a major question in terms of what we're doing to protect free speech. Well, another major issue that I know that you are very passionate about is this whole issue about the rise of China into something other than what everyone thought would be, a compatible partner in world relations, moving towards democracy once they came into the World Trade Organization. I know that you've talked about this before, but I want the audience to hear again. Your concerns about the Chinese relationship, the whole question about American industries being destroyed by the Chinese, and suddenly the pandemic comes on and everyone has an understanding that the Wuhan virus is a Chinese problem. And it's not racist to say Wuhan or Kung Fu or whatever Trump said that triggered such an outrageous response. So my question to you is, going forward, particularly in the area of foreign policy, with where the Chinese are becoming extremely aggressive in the South China Sea and other places like that, they're having major problems in the Indian border. We know that there is a major move on the part of the Chinese to dominate the world, and yet we seem to be asleep at the switch for the last 30 years. Tell me what you can do as a senator to make sure that we do something about China.
Well, first thing this country needs to do is take off the rose-colored glasses. We've been seeing them far too benignly, when in fact they are a malignant force in so many different ways. They are a godless, communist, totalitarian regime. They lie to their people every day, and now we see in the pandemic situation, I called for an investigations day one on it. They have lied to the world and allowed this pandemic to spread. It should never have happened. It could have been contained in China. They put their own doctors in jail who were trying to warn and tell the truth about it. This Communist Party is oppressing religious freedom more than it has in many years. Xi Jinping, the premier in China, is the worst, most totalitarian leader in China in the last four or five, for sure, since Mao, maybe. Mm-hmm. He is definitely consolidating power. He's spying on people using technology, and he's more deeply involved in crushing Christianity than any premier in a long time. So I just would say that. Secondly, they have a goal to be the predominant world power by 2049, to have the number one economy by the end of this decade in the world, and they intend to have the top military, the top technology, and the top economy in the world. Much of what they've done is exploit us. We've tolerated it far too long. It's time for us to back President Trump, who has stood up to them, and there is a powerful China lobby in America. Many specific businesses have special business mm-hmm. interest in activities that are not good for our national interest, our strategic interest. So it's time for the government leaders to speak up. As Attorney General, I discovered how little was being done about the crimes that were being committed mm-hmm. by Chinese entities. I started what we named the China Initiative. We basically doubled the budget for the FBI, more than they asked for this aspect of it. And NPR said that there was zero cases pinned against Chinese entities when I became Attorney General. A year or so ago, there were 50. The FBI Director mm-hmm. Chris Wray said that there are 1,000 investigations ongoing now, and you saw professors at Emory, professors at Arkansas, who were indicted.
And Harvard, too.
And Harvard, yes. Have been indicted for receiving money from Chinese sources while denying that and not disclosing it properly. So this is a big problem. There's a whole host of things. Let me just say it this way. It's no one thing that's going to fix it.
Right.
We need a long-term plan, a strategic plan, much like we had against the Soviet Union, called containment, maybe a similar type idea, but it has to be bipartisan. The Democrats are going to have to step up and join in a rational proposal to contain the illegality and the dangerous trends that we're seeing in China. There's no option to this.
Well, thank you for that. I think you hit the nail on the head with this, and I think that going forward, we're all going to be paying close attention to what's going on with China. I know certainly President Trump is. Now, it's now time for Robert Kennedy to ask his question. So, Robert, it's all up to you now.
Good afternoon, Senator Sessions. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, two questions for you. The first is related to the issue of the national debt. So right now, the national debt is in excess of $26.3 trillion and growing. Historically, fiscal conservative philosophy has argued that both debts and deficits are a threat to national security. My question for you is, do you believe the national debt is a problem? And if so, how would you address it?
It is absolutely a problem. We are reaching a level of debt compared to our economy that suggests we can't sustain it. There's a book out there, This Time It's Different, where nations around the world collapsed economically, and it was because the people denied the reality of the threat, thinking it was different this time. So we cannot be overconfident about it. We were projected to bring in this year $3.7 trillion and to spend about $4.8 trillion. I was ranking Republican on the Budget Committee and worked hard on these issues and was the leading spokesperson in the Senate without question, challenging excessive spending and raising concerns about the debt. It remains a high priority of mine, Robert. You can be sure. But so we've added another $2 trillion in this relief package. All of that will be borrowed because we don't have the money. Already we are in debt. So we've been borrowing just to pay our regular bills. This cannot continue. We're going to have to reduce our spending. Hopefully, this economy will bounce back. I'm not saying we shouldn't have done this relief bill, because if this economy bounces back like we hope it will, I'm sure, be worth it. But boy, we've added more to the debt than we ever have in 1 year. And anybody that's serious and loves America needs to be concerned about the road we're on.
Okay. Thank you for that. My second question has to do with election integrity. So when the Mueller investigation was completed, the output of that report came in two parts. The first part summarized the Russian Internet Research Agency's social media campaign and hacking operations, and the second part addressed a series of potential obstruction of justice charges. My question for you is, do you believe the first part of the report, that the Russian government interfered in the 2016 election? And if so, what do you believe Congress should do to protect the integrity of elections going forward?
Well, to the last part, the president has set forth a requirement that I participated in to ensure that we do protect the integrity of the elections, and it has two parts, one of which is to make sure that our computer systems that are now involved in our elections can, and our computer and our election machinery cannot be manipulated. That's fundamental. I do not believe that's happening now. Our experts tell us it's not happening now, but it could happen, and we need to be on top of that absolutely. Then you have this other thing where you have social media manipulation to perhaps by foreign powers to impact the outcome of the election. That's being worked on hard with Homeland Security, with the FBI, and matters are being brought to a head. As to how much the Russians impacted this election, there seems to be some dispute. I mean, it was said that all the agencies agreed that the Russians were involved in this back, you know, at the beginning, and now it's being said that only four agencies agreed that this kind of thing took place. I frankly don't know the details of it, but I think we should be well aware that foreign hostile powers can utilize social media to attempt to impact elections. Of course, Americans are pretty, you know, tough about not being too impacted by social media, but it's not a good thing, and to the extent to which it's possible to stop them, prosecute them, I'm all for it.
Good. Robert, thank you for your questions.
Thank you for your questions.
And, Sean, it's your turn now. We'll see what our audience has to say. Go ahead, Sean.
All right. From the text line here, it said, a question for Mr. Sessions. Why not call out Tuberville for his fake commercial where he walks down the steps of the plane with President Trump?
Well, I understand that he did, in fact, certainly he didn't fly over there with the president. He goes on the plane after it lands, and he then comes down and has a photo op suggesting that he's been traveling with the president. Let me tell you what I did, Sean. I travel with the president all over this country. I travel with him to Mexico. I sat by him time and again. I would introduce normally Rudy Giuliani, and Rudy Giuliani would introduce the president at these rallies all over the country. I saw what he told the people. I saw the reaction to what he did. Tommy Tuberville never lifted a finger for Donald Trump, never endorsed him, never gave a dime to his campaign, and never said anything good about him. So I'm just would tell you, it is a frustrating and I think really dishonest for him, many of the things that they are suggesting that about my service and my effort to help President Trump get elected, and I've done nothing to undermine him that was not required by law, that's for sure.
All right, let's stay with that theme. Tim on the text line says, I'd like to know what Jeff is going to do if elected to try to get back into President Trump's good graces.
Well, I'm going to do what a good senator from Alabama should do, and that is be a resolute, courageous, tough, knowledgeable advocate for the things that the president has been campaigning for. Look, he's mad at me. Everybody knows that. He's decided he'd like to see Tommy Tuberville be elected. We know that. But Mr. Tuberville does not know the issues like I do. He's never been involved deeply in China. In fact, he said last summer, that President Trump is beating up China every day, and I really don't agree with that. He said he's a 100% free trader. He does not believe in tariffs. Do we not know that the president used tariffs to bring Mexico and Canada to the table to replace NAFTA? Do we not know that he's slapped tariffs on China right now? And that's why they came to the table and we had an initial progress with them. And he's prepared to do it again. This religious free trade idea that you can never use tariffs, even when trading partners are cheating you blind, then it's just ridiculous. So Mr. Tuberville is wrong about that. These are important issues. If we're going to defend American manufacturing, don't we need this fight back against subsidies and unfair trading practices? What about China stealing our technology, hacking into our systems? And we need to go after them aggressively, and tariffs have to be a weapon. You don't want to use them. We don't believe if you don't have to. But we cannot unilaterally disarm in the face of massive cheating by China and some other countries, but none come close to the huge cheating and surpluses in trade they have achieved against us. It's a big deal. We need to fight it. The members of the Senate need to be helping the president instead of sitting silent on the sideline. Very few. Great Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, a few others are speaking up, but not nearly enough. You can be sure I was doing it before, and I will do it again if I return to the Senate, and I will be a leader on this. I understand this issue.
All right, I will save so many more questions coming in. Save these for the second half of the hour as we'll take a break in a second. Before we do, we have about 40 seconds here, and this is from Fred. I have no issue with Tuberville being backed by the president and him being behind the president. My concern is what happens when President Trump is no longer president. Does he have the discernment and governmental integrity to maintain and keep a standard above what the people expect? I doubt it as it stands now.
Well, I would just say it's not just voting like the president would like you to vote. It's are you really able to help the president win votes, go to the media, lay out a case that justifies and supports the president's action.
All right, coming right back with the second half hour of your chance to ask questions as Dr. Liu and Robert Kennedy Jr. are of Jeff Sessions right here on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and it is a forum with Jeff Sessions. And I want to point out this as we're talking about the Republican runoff in the Senate, that Tommy Tuberville was invited to be part of this forum or debate and has chosen not to. So I want to make sure that everybody knows that the option has been made open to both men in this race. Moderators here, Dr. Liu Campomenosi from the Common Sense Campaign and Robert Kennedy Jr., part of the questioning, and your questions from the text line at 343-0106 or the phone line at 343-0106. I'll hand it back over to Dr. Liu.
Thank you, Sean. We're going to continue with the questioning. I'll take the next two questions, then Robert will have two questions, and then Sean will have however many questions he wants to
stack
ask.
Of them, yes.
There you go, backing us up here. Okay, you know, Senator Sessions, we've had two different town hall meetings with you, and at each of these I've suggested to you that you really need to vet hard Tuberville to let people know who he really is. The last time we talked, I mentioned the hedge fund business that he was involved with, okay? I also think that we were talking about this yesterday on the show. Paul Welburn has a cabinet company that was saved by the tariffs that Trump put in, because they were going to just come in there and dump Chinese cabinets at a lower price because they're subsidized. We understand that. But the interesting thing to me is that I don't think anyone has really made the connection between Tommy Tuberville and the Club for Growth and their support for a policy that would have destroyed an Alabama company. Can you tell me now what your plan is? And I know this is kind of, you know, in the political realm. It's not policy questions, but it is critical because Welburn's company would have gone under if those tariffs hadn't been done. And Tuberville is supported by Club for Growth. I don't even think he understands what's going on. You get it. Trump gets it. Does Tuberville really get it?
Well, he said he's a 100% free trader and does not believe in tariffs. Now, that is out of his own mouth. He's not buying ads saying that. He's buying ads saying, I'm going to build a wall, you know, and I'm tough. So this Welburn cabinet, I know the Welburn family is a fabulous family, mm-hmm. and they've done so much for that region. And the tariffs have helped them and maybe been critical for their survival. So tariffs do work. The president is willing to use it. That's just an example of the situation we face worldwide or nationwide from unfair competition. Thousands of jobs have been lost, hundreds of factories have been closed, tens of thousands, millions of jobs have been lost. So this is the kind of thing that we do need to fight back against. Club for Growth opposed President Trump. They bought ads all over this country hammering him. Tommy Tuberville is one of his top consultants that came down and set up his campaign, came from Forward.us, Rob Jessmer. Rob Jessmer is one of the centers of the open borders, loose immigration policy. Mm-hmm. He's now at Forward.us. That's the Zuckerberg, Bill Gates company, a special interest group that they use to advocate for their political agenda, which is free trade, soft on China, and more and more and more immigration. And they oppose. That's the group I fought against. I'm telling you, when I led the fight and won on the battle three times, really, mm-hmm. over immigration, I led the fight each time. Forward.us and the Silicon Valley crowd were the number one opponents. And Rob Jessmer is right in the heart of it, and he's been down here and still on the payroll of the Tuberville campaign. So he's wrong on trade, and he's wrong on immigration, and he's wrong on China. I mean, we don't need to send somebody to Washington that we don't know who they are, what they believe in. The man's from Florida. He just passed through here a few years at Auburn. Somehow got he quit, but somehow got his $5 million payout mm-hmm. that you're supposed to get only if you're fired. And then he extracted another $2 million out of Auburn. That's not been discussed. How did he get another $2 million above his contract price? So those are some things we need to be asking about. I am very uneasy. I'm telling you, his agenda is the globalist agenda,
exactly.
not the Trump agenda. That's what we ran against. That's what the fight was all about, over immigration and trade and China and this ridiculous Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement that got 95 votes in the Senate. I led the fights against it. That was the first round of fast-track mm-hmm. vote. But when President Trump came on board later, I led the fight against it. Senator Shelby and Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Susan Collins were the five of us. And it was on the way to passage. But Trump's picked up the cause after he announced later, and it died. But it would have been a disaster. So these are the kind of things that are important, and you need Alabamans need to think about before they vote for somebody to be launched into Washington.
Well, I completely agree, and I think you just got yourself a nice little radio ad, and Sean will be more than happy to send it to you. I mean, that's exactly what people need to know. They don't know who he is, and we've been trying to tell people that, but I do think coming from you, the way you just stated it, I think is exactly what needs to be said. My next question is along the lines of not quite what we've been talking about, okay? It's less, quote, political. It's more along the lines of a philosophical question about the degree to which there's a threat to our liberty as a result of a combination of things. The growth of the federal regulatory, you know, agencies, independent of what Congress wants. I know Congress, and I think you were there when they actually passed a law that basically says regulatory agencies cannot pass a particular regulation without having congressional approval if it goes over $100 million, you know, impact, okay? So, but this question is deeper than just that. The question is the degree to which we have transferred legitimate authority from Congress to these regulatory agencies, number one. And then number two is this whole question of the deep state. And what has come out with Comey and all those people, Brennan, all these folks that did this coup against Trump? It seems to me that if you're going back to the Senate, that you've learned some lessons, you've seen how all this has worked from the IG, the AG position, which obviously you could not get involved with. We all understand that. But the point now is, if you're going there knowing the extent to which you have this deep state, not only in terms of the FBI and the CIA, but the continuing issues about overburdening the American people with regulations after regulations. How do you think you're going to be prepared? Well, let's put it this way. I know you're going to be prepared, but how will you actually affect the changes that are going to be necessary to control these regulatory agencies in a much stricter way and deal with the deep state questions that supposedly are going to be taken care of with the Durham, you know, investigation?
Well, Dr. Liu, that we could talk, you know, an hour about all of that. Let me just, you asked my, how I have changed my thought, what I've learned. I'll say this to the listeners out there. If you think that I became more sold out, became more and more influenced by political correctness, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, special interest, then you shouldn't vote for me. You know, a new voice will be fine. But I actually drifted the other way. I became more and more to understand that this government was too often supporting special interest and not the people's interest, that half of America makes below median income, which is below $60,000 a year. And they hadn't had a pay raise above inflation for 20 years until President Trump came in, and salaries have gone above inflation, thank goodness, for a change. But that's the kind of thing that led me to support President Trump. I saw too much special interest influence in Congress. I saw too many people that say, I'm 100% free trader. I don't believe in tariffs. Don't ever believe in tariffs. Who were responding to the China lobby that said, don't pick a fight with China. If you put tariffs on China, it'll create a trade war. But we're in a trade war. That's the fact. Exactly. We were not fighting. And anyway, what President Trump and I talked about was that we have the leverage. We are not afraid of China. China has more to lose from us than we have to lose from them. We can make the products in the United States. We can make our medicines here. We can make them in Canada or Mexico or other places. Japan, Philippines, allies of ours, not hostile powers, India, Vietnam, whatever. So we need to move those supply chains out of China and tell them flat out, if you're not playing by the rules, we're not doing business with you. And they are the ones that will be hurt. They're making this huge profit off selling into our markets. So I don't know if I fully answered your question. Then on regulations, we're so pleased to ratchet down regulations in the Department of Justice, just huge numbers. We undid, as the president asked every cabinet agency to do. I issued a new order controlling the abuses of consent decrees, where there would almost be a friendly lawsuit between a city and a group or the Department of Justice, and then they would settle the lawsuit and get a federal judge to order the school system, the police department, the sheriff's department, the prison system to do what the federal judge says. Well, that's against freedom.
Right.
These people are unelected. They're unaccountable. It's the elected people that need to be doing that. So I have a firm belief that you're right, that this government, the bureaucracy, has gained too much power. I know how it works. And as Attorney General, we appointed lots of sub-cabinet people that are good people. If Joe Biden gets elected president, Mm-hmm. He is going to appoint Bernie Sanders staffers, Elizabeth Warren staffers. He's going to pack this economy with socialist and left-wing people who don't believe in the rule of law. And I tell you, this election is important.
It certainly is. And I thank you for that long answer. It was very well thought out, and I appreciate it. Robert, it's now your turn. Go ahead.
Senator Sessions, the next question is related to health care. There are three healthcare philosophies that are being discussed. The first is the Affordable Care Act, as it exists today. The second is a public option to compete with current private insurance options. And the third is Medicare for All insurance. What is your healthcare philosophy? And when you answer, can you please provide your point of view as to whether or not private health insurance companies should be able to deny coverage for pre-existing conditions or to drop people for reaching lifetime limits?
Well, Robert, I think the three options you just floated are all pretty much options that the Democrats favor. Look, I'm going to be really frank with you. This is an exceedingly complex subject. It's not going to get settled without some sort of bipartisan agreement that nobody's happy with. There'll be a lot of pain and angst, but I do not favor the government taking over health care. And I absolutely believe there are nothing that I would support nothing that denies the right of individual citizens to choose their doctor, because that's the only protection you have to these three policies. I believe each one of them is essentially socialized medicine, government-dominated medicine. So I know that the debates have been there intensely. Republicans and President Trump have laid out an alternative. That alternative clearly and unequivocally states that people with pre-existing illnesses can't be denied coverage and will be able to receive coverage. So that's where we are. But to just mandate out of the blue that insurance companies have to cover pre-existing illnesses when a new person shows up to buy insurance is probably something. We're gonna pay them the extra money? Government gonna give it to them to justify that, or are they gonna raise the rates if they have to do that? And it would encourage people who've not had insurance, and when they get sick, to run and demand insurance, and then never having paid into the system like insurance is designed to do. So it is a very, very complicated and important issue. I really do believe that there's not the solution that I see yet that would work and is likely to pass, but we got to keep working at it.
My last question has to do with the issue of protesting. So in the aftermath of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, a multiracial, multi-generational group has taken to the streets to protest. In your own words, can you explain why you believe this is the case?
Well, I think there are several factors at work. There is a group out there, the Antifa-type group, that are anarchists who look to exploit things. And there are there's political pressure or gain for certain political interest. But I really do believe there is a sense among our minority African-American community that people aren't listening to them. I saw George Floyd's brother say, "We just want respect." We need to make sure in this country that when we deal with people, whether it's as police or those of us in government office, that we're respectful of people. And to ignore them and not hear them is not a good thing. The chief president of the Alabama Chiefs of Police Association, Bill Partridge from Oxford, who supported me, told me he has a clear policy that if anybody is unhappy, they can call him. He will meet with them about his police department and how they do their job. So that's just so important. The violence is absolutely wrong. It cannot be tolerated. We do not, legitimate protests cannot justify that they have a protest, therefore I can commit violence and destruction of property. I strongly believe that we cannot tolerate taking over neighborhoods, but I do say that it's listening to our communities, working with them, because the polls say in inner city neighborhoods, even in Chicago, almost two-thirds of the African-American community want more police, not less police. That's what my experience was as a federal prosecutor right here in Mobile, U.S. attorney for 12 years, assistant for 2.5. I know how people feel about this crime issue. They want safe neighborhoods, and policing, good policing, works. Bad policing or insufficient policing will cause crime to go up, just as we've seen in Chicago and Baltimore. And we're seeing the police departments in New York and in Los Angeles be demoralized. I saw an article today that the morale in Los Angeles, which was really a good police department for a big city like that, is down to the lowest point maybe ever. So we got to be careful that we don't harm the very thing that makes us safe, our fabulous men and women of police and sheriffs and state troopers and others.
Thank you, Robert.
Good questions.
Okay, Sean, back to you. All right, here from the text line. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll go to this one first because it dovetails. It said, I have not heard any conservative senators or congressmen stand up for police departments in this country. Why do you think that is, and what could you do as senator?
Well, I am an absolute champion of it. I felt that when I became Attorney General that one of my highest priorities was to make sure that the police knew that we supported them, that we backed them and their mission, that their mission was noble and moral and good and righteous and important for the poorest and the minority citizens the most in our community, who are most victimized by crime of all kinds, and protecting children. So I've done that. I've done op-eds about it since I've been in this race. I've gone on TV and condemned the riots that have occurred and the attacks on police. I've been rigorously accurate, I think, in condemning the defund police departments, and I'm a big supporter of them. I can show you. I'll be quick. Chicago entered into a consent decree of a lawsuit filed by the ACLU. It took place January 1st. It reduced police presence in the communities. It told them to reduce arrest, to stop stopping so many people. The police did that. Homicides went from 460 to almost 800 in 1 year. 460 to 800. Maybe the greatest increase in homicide any great city has ever seen in America. And a federal judge studied it, retired federal judge did afterwards, and concluded it was direct result of the reduced presence of the police. And the people of Chicago, the African American community of Chicago, want more police. They want respectful police, they want professional police, but they want safety. And that's what it's all about, and this defund movement is ridiculous.
All right, from the text line here, some supporters of Bradley Byrne did not like your late entry into the campaign. What can you do or say to mend any angry feelings concerning that?
Well, Bradley was my congressman. He's a talented person. He had a record. I felt that at this point in history that the battles I was having in the Senate for the people. I was accused of being a populist. I don't know if there's anything wrong with being an honest populist, as one former judge told me.
Pretty popular these days.
A good, honest populist that told the truth. So I believe that trade was closing our factories and laying off workers. I believe that the immigration levels were too high. I believe the illegal immigration should be stopped. I believe those things were hampering the ability of Americans to find jobs and find work, and nobody cared because the masters of the universe, if you've heard that phrase, that's the one I created. because that's what I called them, because they were interested only in the GDP and their own profit margin for their globalist countries. They're not worrying about working people. So that's where I firmly believed. I thought Donald Trump evoked that feeling and laid out a plan that would help, and that's why I endorsed him, and for no other reason. And he's honored that, really. He's been very good. We've had wages have gone up, and if we stay at this another 4 years, we can fix immigration, we can defend ourselves against unfair trade, and we'll see wages increase and more jobs available. But right now, I'm worried about our economy. Hopefully we'll come back out of this. I think most Americans are really worried about their jobs, maybe their company, whether it can survive or not. They want to see growth and prosperity in the future. We need infrastructure. We've got to get this bridge built here. We've got to get the channel into the state docks and all of that dredged and effective, keep our military bases in the state strong and healthy. They are hugely important for our jobs and our economy. So that's a big part of being a senator, too, is taking care of the people and the interest of its own state, because there are people that will take it elsewhere if you blink your eye, they'll take it and move it to another state.
Jeff Sessions, as always, thank you for your time. Dr. Lou Campomenosi, Doctor, appreciate that. Robert Kennedy Jr., all of you gentlemen making this possible, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Coming right back, and we'll head to Cam Marston and What's Working Special Edition right here on FM Talk 106.5. Of course, this podcast will be available coming up sometime during the next hour. You'll be able to go to fmtalk1065.com to the podcast tab and get it there, or iTunes, Stitcher, or any podcast platform.